The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back, Wednesday. And William is back tonight, been busy as ever, and we have some really strange things. Trump, if Trump is known for anything in his term as president for 4 years, it was his suspiciously beyond incompetent selections of people to fill various positions in his administration and the Supreme Court. He's showing no signs of slowing down. The rumor a couple of weeks ago that Bubble Boy Marco Rubio was one of them, one of the finalists in contention. You just want to puke. He's a pro border invasion flunky of the controllers. I don't know what Trump is up to, except he's following orders directly. There's another guy. The hell is he from Florida? I've never heard of him, and he's got ties to the Heritage Foundation and other things that I'm not interested in at all. Let's say hello to William and welcome him back.
Got some great news to report. First, hearing it here first, we just won a very important battle by 221 to 198, the SAVE Act that our Alley Pack activists have been fighting for quite some time, but especially the last 48 hours on, it's Wednesday night, Monday and Tuesday were big days. Headlines read, just came out about 2 hours ago. The U.S. House passed a bill requiring proof of citizenship to vote in federal races. It says that this bill would require individuals registering to vote provide proof of citizenship to participate in federal elections. Passed 221 to 198, and also requires states to check their voter rolls for registered non-citizens.
A new industry is born. All right.
Well, the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or SAVE, is intended to prevent non-citizen voting. While the act is already illegal under current law, only citizens can vote in elections.
Yeah.
But the National Voter Registration Act of 1993 prohibits states from confirming citizenship status. Voting laws vary by state, and some states like Georgia and Wisconsin requiring a photo ID, and others such as Pennsylvania and New Mexico requiring no documentation at all. Didn't know that. Didn't know Pennsylvania and New Mexico were nothing. Uh-huh. States that do mandate photo ID or other documents use driver's licenses, military ID cards, student ID cards, birth certificates, tribal ID cards, or even a recent utility bill, which is completely lame. The SAVE Act, introduced by Alley Pack endorsed GOP Rep. Chip Roy of Texas in May, would require most individuals to have a passport to register to vote. Now, that's just not true. You don't have to have a passport. You're going to need a birth certificate, and they're going to have a whole host of different things. And they can come up with a lot of different ways to make it easier to do this. Does not require a passport. That's freaking ridiculous. You know, what am I reading here? I'm reading from the Missouri Independent. And, you know, this is what happens when you read the first thing that pops up on Google, right? You get the left-leaning, distorted, blah, blah, blah. But the bill has passed the House. We got a tougher fight in the Senate. I got an email today or yesterday from one of our supporters saying, I don't want to call to support this bill because Joe Biden said he's going to veto it, okay? And I want to address that because, you know what, sometimes, you know, there's an old rule, Jeff, for every one person that shares with you their sentiments about or concerned about something, there's another 50 mm-hmm. who won't. All right?
That's probably correct, yeah.
Yes. And I appreciate it. I really do appreciate hearing from folks, even when it's contrary to what we're trying to do, okay?
Yeah.
But,
sure.
Number one, we don't let Joe Biden decide anything about what we're going to do. Okay, there's no equation at Allipack where it goes, well, old Joe Biden said he's going to veto it, so I guess we better not do nothing. No, that's not how we operate.
Uh-huh.
Getting this bill passed by the United States House is a major accomplishment and a win for our side, a win for our organization, and it's going to go down as number 81 on our documentation of non-citizen voters, because surely if the United States Congress votes to pass a bill about a problem, there must be something to it maybe, right? So it's going on the list to reinforce things. And here's what I would say, but if we get this thing passed from the Senate and Joe Biden vetoes it, okay, that's almost worth more in the election year than it passing, because we just had a case with the Biden debate disaster, the BDD, where the rest of the country that doesn't watch the news as closely as the listeners of this program do finally figured out what we already knew, that Biden had slipped and gone completely senile on all of us, and probably has been for some time. If Biden vetoes this bill, it will be the same politically as him holding a press conference and admitting that Democrats know non-citizens are voting and they're counting on them this year, okay, which is important to our strategy. We know from the Rasmussen polling at the end of 2023 that a majority of U.S. voters, about 54%, I believe it was, believe that illegals, not just non-citizens, but illegal migrants or immigrants or aliens or illegal alien invader Satanists, whatever you want to call them, we're going to decide the next national election. So we're north of 54% now, especially with this bill, with what Elon Musk has been saying, with what Trump's been saying, a lot of people have been saying. I would say we're probably at least in the 60% of Americans know that illegal aliens are going to be voting this year. And we're probably, if I had to guess, we're near 60% or headed towards the two-thirds, all right? Now, there's a certain group of people out there, Jeff, that are the dumbest in the brick, that don't pay attention to nothing, their head is in the sand, ain't never going to reach them. But as we get closer to 2 out of 3 voters in this country acknowledging and believing that illegal mm-hmm. aliens are going, this all increases in impetus mm-hmm. because think about it, the elites, the controllers, are they really going to tell us the day after Election Day, what is it, November, are they really going to tell us, the American public, all of us, on November 6th, that despite everything that's happened with Biden and the Democrats, that they still won? No one's going to believe it. Now, if the Republicans win and pick up seats in the House and pick up in the seats in the Senate, people are going to believe it. A lot of people ain't going to like it, but people are going to believe it. All right?
Yeah. That's true.
So the best course, the course that the smart elites are probably going to aim for is for the Republicans to gain a little bit here and there, but not very much enough to change anything. That's what their smartest game is going to be, because if we're sitting there on November 6th with Democrats having picked up seats and won mm-hmm. the presidency after everything has happened, that's going to be like trying to throw the American car into reverse while it's doing 55 on the highway.
You got Republicans out there now. You say the Republicans are gain a little bit, but not a whole lot. And my comeback to that was, rhetorically, what does it matter? You got rhinos all over the place now. What the hell is a Republican? Who do you trust? Well, that's another question.
There's about a quarter to a third of the Rhino Republicans that in my opinion, some of them are just greedy, unethical bastards that will make dollar no matter what.
Uh-huh.
Others are probably have videos and pictures of them with little kids, in the hands of a certain foreign government we shall not name. Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell's dad was Mossad, and apparently Jeffrey liked to compare himself to Ghislaine's daddy. A lot of them are compromised for different reasons.
But how can that possibly be, William? There are only 17 million of them on the planet, and not all of them identify as being of that particular club. Maybe 2 or 3%, 4% don't. So they're on the sidelines yelling, this isn't right, genocide is wrong. But they get buried pretty quickly. It's a bad group. It's a little teeny tiny group. Go ahead.
Yeah, but the 1% are a teeny tiny group that like controlling things around the planet. And not what a better way to control anybody than to get videos of them with a minor child in a sex act. Yeah, that's the most politically controlling thing that anybody could do, and apparently it's what's been done. But anyway, on that topic, Marco Rubio, if the only thing Trump could do right now to mess his chances of winning this thing up is selecting Amnesty Rubio as his VP, which we put a thing out tonight because apparently there seems to be quite a few people out there that forget that Marco Rubio was in the Gang of Eight right next to Chucky Schumer, Senator Bennett, and Dick Durbin, and John McCain in 2013, and he stood up with and voted for and passed S-744, Mass Amnesty for Illegal Aliens, which this organization, Alipac, and others, thankfully were able to stop in the United States House. If we had not stopped that bill in the United States House, then 10 years ago, over 10 million illegals would have already become citizens with voting rights, and this would all be over already permanently against our wishes, for the most part, because of Marco Rubio. And as I got together the facts to put this thing together and put out the email alert today from alipac.us, I started digging. Trump was bashing Rubio in 2015. Trump called Marco Rubio, quote, amnesty. Well, what do you call the little thing? It's not a quote mark, but it's like half a quote mark. What do you call that on the keyboard? You know what I'm talking about? The symbol. It's like half.
It's like an apostrophe.
Yeah, apostrophe. Like Marco Amnesty Rubio is what Trump said about him. And let me read this to you. This is exactly so. It puzzles me and a lot of people that Marco Rubio is apparently in the short list of likely VP picks at this very moment, which is also weird because they're both from Florida. Why would Trump pick somebody else from the same state that he's sitting in, here we go. The Guardian, November 12, 2015. Marco Rubio supports migrant amnesty because he's Hispanic, says Trump. Donald Trump has said Marco Rubio supports amnesty for millions of undocumented immigrants because he is Hispanic. Now, Trump probably didn't say it like that. That's probably The Guardian twisting things around a bit. But it says that during an interview with CNN host Aaron Burnett, cited Rubio's inspirational story as a Hispanic and son of Cuban immigrants while discussing immigration
right
reform.
Now. You don't even have to go any further.
Important. This is important because everybody out there, it's time for us to remind everybody what Trump said about his current likely vice presidential pick. He says, quote, "That's why he wants amnesty," end quote. Trump, who is a Republican presidential frontrunner, responded. Early in the program, Trump said Rubio, quote, "was always in favor of amnesty," in reference to the Florida senator's work as the co-author of the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, S-744 in 2013, that included a, get this, included a pathway to citizenship for the roughly 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States. And I'll add, at that time. The last thing is, quote, he was always in favor of letting people pour into our country, end quote, Trump said. Then what happened to us? When people found out, he sank like a rock in the water. So, yeah, people heard Trump talking about Marco Rubio supporting amnesty, which he did, and he fell like a brick. Why the heck is Marco Rubio on Trump's short list for VP?
One heartbeat away from president, so to speak. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. Well, the governor of South Dakota, that nice young lady, is out of the game. The North Dakota governor was being mentioned a while on the short list. I think they're just throwing these things out as trial balloons. Remember when Don Jr. tossed out Tucker Carlson, which I thought was actually a politically pragmatic thing to do. It would stake out, it would remove any ambiguity that Trump is standing on now. Tucker is generally considered to be a patriot, although there are issues. And then he's got a bunch of others. Look, I don't know where it's going to go, but it probably will be a nobody. What's the guy in Florida's name? Damn it, I can't remember it. It starts with a D, I believe. And I've never heard of the guy. So we'll find out soon enough.
Well, he's got a situation where, it would, two things. It would really throw a bucket of water on Trump's current momentum after the Biden debate disaster. It would distract away from the Biden debate disaster, and it would put pressure against the same type of base voters that left Trump's orbit during his first term. Now, people say, oh, Trump lost 2020 because of fraud. Yeah, fraud was part of it. Non-citizen voters were part of it. But something else that was also a part of Trump's loss in 2020, I am 100% certain of, was the voters that helped him win in 2016 that he alienated by flopping on in support of amnesty. He told us he was going to end Obama's DACA amnesty on day one, and instead of doing that, he sent Jared Kushner over to offer the Democrats a deal on amnesty and citizenship for 1.8 million illegal aliens. And that blew away a lot of his supporters. And he won by a very narrow margin. I'm quite certain that cost him the margin of victory, because illegal immigration and what people believed he was going to do from what he campaigned on in 2015 and 16 was what won him the race. And he blew that out of there. And, you know, this time he's campaigning tough on immigration again, because that's what he should do. But the angel families that lost loved ones to illegal aliens are no longer on stage with Donald Trump. The big names, the big name nationally known border hawks that all endorsed and got on stage with Donald Trump to elect him in 2016 are not there. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is not on the campaign. Kobach's not on the campaign.
Well, it's almost like there's not a, it's like there's really not a campaign going on right now. There's no bumper sticker crap. None of it. And remember in 2015, 2016, Donald Trump ran a legitimate campaign that lasted 18 months. True story.
Well,
nobody remembers that.
I'm not trying to help Trump win in this by what I'm doing here. One, we oppose rhino amnesty supporters like Marco Rubio, all right? And two, we don't want any type of amnesty supporter in the presidency or the vice presidency. Therefore, we oppose amnesty. You
oppose
Marco Rubio as being the vice president. And third, I don't want to see the negative impact that it's going to have on the down ballot if Trump blows and messes up a big portion of his own current momentum by doing something as stupid as picking Rubio for the VP, because it'll communicate that Trump won, may not be sincere or genuine about his immigration promises to mass deport illegals. And two, Trump thinks that he can campaign in 2016 and call him Marco Amnesty Rubio and badmouth him and bash him for trying to give citizenship and voting rights to 11 million illegals, and then turn around and make him into the VP pick.
Where to the point now, honest to God, William, who do you trust out there? Who's really worth a damn anymore in big-time politics? They're all compromised, or they have no ethics going in. I can't think of anybody. Well, how about, all right, Representative Massey. And that poor guy has been speaking the truth right to the face of power for a long time, saying a lot of really good things. And rather than kill him and make him a martyr, they stabbed him in the heart, and there are very suspicious circumstances around the death of his wife, sudden death of his wife, who was not injected. So, and he's not talking about it. I think I don't rule anything out. It may sound like some kind of a soap opera plot, but I think that's what we're living in. Go ahead, please.
Well, and as I did the review on things, I dug a little deeper in on Slimy Rubio and went a little further back, because he won his Senate race in 2010 after profusely promising voters that he opposed amnesty. He opposed amnesty.
Lies.
Well,
lies.
Let me tell you what he did. He campaigned on, I oppose amnesty. No way I would support amnesty, blah, 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 blah. Then he won the Senate seat. Immediately jumped in to the Gang of Eight with Schumer and Menendez and all the swamp critters to support amnesty for 11 million illegal aliens. And Megyn Kelly, I know people have take issue with her about this, but Megyn Kelly confronted him about this and paid very close attention to what it is that Marco Rubio said, because this is the type of game that we have to be careful about with Trump and all Republicans, okay? Megyn Kelly asked Marco Rubio, explain what sounded like different positions on granting legal status to people illegally in the country, often described as amnesty, during the Republican debate in Des Moines, Iowa on January 28. She said, when you ran for Senate in 2010, you made it clear you opposed legalization and citizenship for illegal immigrants, Kelly said. You promised repeatedly that you would oppose it as a U.S. senator as well. She then played a series of video clips in which he spoke against amnesty in the past. Kelly then asked Rubio, within 2 years of getting elected, you were co-sponsoring legislation to create a path to citizenship. In your words, amnesty. Haven't you already proven that you cannot be trusted on this issue? End quote. Rubio countered and said, no, because if you look at the quote, and it's very specific, and it says blanket amnesty, I do not support blanket amnesty.
Sleaze doesn't come close.
Jeff, I lost your voice. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm just looking something up. I'm looking something up to back up what you're just saying here, and I got hung up on a page.
Yeah,
look,
see,
he's been
Rubio,
in the Senate.
It's easy to understand. He don't support blanket amnesty.
He's a lying sack of fertilizer. All right. He's been in the Senate since 2011. That's 13, 14 years. Why is he still there? Because
once you get in the Senate, you stay in as long as you want. That's right.
Anyway, he's despicable. They all are. I don't like any of them. Maybe Massey. But that's a real choice, a real American, a real patriot who has traditionally been saying all the right things. Now, saying the right things, let me qualify that, doesn't guarantee us of anything, as you just pointed out very eloquently. It means he lies. They're all liars.
Well, he exemplifies the problem with the nation and the Republican Party. The problem with the nation is that the Democrats are absolutely horrible on many things, including wanting to allow the genital mutilation of children, as well as open borders and amnesty for illegals and violation of free speech rights, violation of gun rights, violation of almost everything. You know, if your grandparents were Democrats, they would not recognize this unholy
BS. No, JFK?
Yes.
John Kennedy was the last traditional Democrat that we may have had at the highest level, and they executed him in broad daylight.
And so here come the Republicans, and to win, they come out like Marco Rubio and contrast themselves and say, I'm going to vote for me.
I want nothing to do with it.
And then you vote for them.
I hate it.
And then they go to D.C. and they do the exact opposite of what they told
everybody
they were going to do.
And get away with it. They're horrible people. It's not the best that America has. You'd make a fabulous U.S. senator. Maybe even a higher position than that. But we don't have people like that. I think most of them are too smart to want to walk into that cesspool. They don't want to get that stuff all over them. They stay the hell away. They know if they cause trouble, they'll be eradicated immediately.
Well, that plus the price tag.
Oh, it's $3 million to run for Senate? Minimum?
I haven't checked recently. Let's look at Congress first. Average.
It's one and a half for Congress, I think. Yeah.
Congressional campaign. Let's just look at that one. '90 through 2022, how much was spent? Totals. Well, looks like in 2022, almost $10 billion was spent. What's the average? They don't give me the averages. Somebody should at least try to look it up during the break here. Are we due for the break? Where's the break music?
The break snuck right past you. You didn't see it.
I think the...
It doesn't want to, you know what, it doesn't want to tell us what it costs to run. Here's an article in The Atlantic. I'll bet they're just going to play games here. Let me see here.
Here's one I found from 2013. That's too old.
Oh, way too old. Triple that. I think it's $2 or $3 million minimum for Senate. But they won't tell us. We'll have to really do some digging here. No, that isn't it. No, it's several million. It has
Oh, here we go. No, that's again. All I'm finding is the total cost of elections. I'm not. I want to see the average of the winning
candidate. Of course.
Yes, but the average winning.
We don't want filing fees. We want the expenses of the campaign race itself. How much do they total?
Yeah, we'll have to find that. But the bottom line to it is, it's beyond most people's reach.
Oh, well, that's where all the donations come in. And guess who donates the money? The same group. 17 million people on the planet, about 7 million in the U.S. They buy influence with everybody of any substance who's going to run. That's where the campaign money comes from, most of it.
Yeah,
if you offend the Jews, you don't get any money.
I believe AIPAC is the biggest PAC as far as money goes. American Israeli Political
Agency.
Action Committee. And then you got the banks, the big bank PACs, and then you got the U.S. Chamber of Commerce PACs, the largest, you're like S&P 500 corporations and their PACs, and, you know, they control that money. And the old adage from, like, decades ago, and this is back when my poli-sci degree in the 90s, I mean, back right. in the 90s, 94% of campaigns who spent the most won. And that was
there
before...
There you go. That's how the Jews gain their influence. And
well,
Jew is okay
I mean,
to use for a word. It's like Catholic or Protestant. Then they are the money people. Everybody knows it. Here,
well,
I've got some data. Oh, I'm not speaking for William. I'm speaking for me. Or our AliPac. Here, in 2020, now that's the last major election
before
cycle.
Before we move on, let me just say, it's not all Jews that are doing it, and it's not
we know
all
that. We
Jewish
know that.
People that are doing it, yeah.
No, that's a given. Nobody's that stupid, at least I hope not. The great majority of them stick together. Let's leave it at that. All right, U.S. House of Representatives. And there's some people living right now that are Jewish. Listening right now, wonderful people, and they know that I have tipped my hat to the majority who have taken such incredible control of the planet and this country, because what they've done is astounding with the numbers they have, but it's all geared to money and influence. Boy, if you can give somebody money, big money, for a campaign, and you don't think you control them, you're in the wrong business.
Well, I was a little surprised when I found out recently that the American Israeli PAC, or AIPAC, has a handler for each member of
every
Congress.
Every congressman. Everyone. What does that tell you?
Full-time plus handler
what
for
does
each
that tell you?
Congress critter.
Tells
that's
you everything
amazing.
You should need to know. Come on, that's not the American way. Give me a break. Here, U.S. House of Representatives. In the 2020 election cycle, the average successful campaign for the U.S. House spent over $2 million. The average successful campaign spent over $2 million. Now, for example, Georgia's 7th congressional districts saw total expenditures surpassing $14 million for both major party candidates for the House.
Wow. And what is it on Senate? $10 to $15 million?
All right, sit down.
Well, running for U.S. Senate in a state like California is going to be a lot more expensive than running for Senate in a state like Wyoming.
You're running for the Politburo, and you're a Bolshevik. That's what you'd be. The stakes are even higher in the U.S. Senate. Let me do this.
The higher your state's human population or voter universe, the more a mailer costs, the more advertising costs, the more campaign materials and all the stuff that costs.
I think we should have about a 6-week campaign. Everybody has to do their thing in 6 weeks. That's plenty of time for people in the electorate to make up their minds. And then you shut this crap down. We don't need a year and a half of campaigning. That's the amusing thing that's going on now. For once, we're not being put through that big money mill. The stakes are even higher in the U.S. Senate, where campaigns can run into tens of millions. The average successful Senate campaign expenditure in 2020 was nearly $20 million. High-profile cases such as the 2020 South Carolina Senate race saw combined spending from the candidates exceed, William, $130 million.
Well, somebody should slice me off a piece of that.
Get your yarmulke and sign the papers.
Well,
Their money. They're the big donors. Everybody knows it. So don't hide it. Just lay it out. That's the fact of the matter. We have a paid representative government here, paid for by people who do not necessarily represent the will of the majority in this country.
Well,
and that's why Rubio did his 180. Why? Because he owed. He was indebted. Go ahead.
Well, and also, you know, apparently, if the reports, news reports, be to believe at all, they're claiming that some of the donor class is concerned about J.D. Vance of Ohio being the running mate. And what I want to, you know, I think the dividing line, from my perspective, in my opinion, isn't Christianity, Judaism, Islam, you know, that stuff. It's who is going to do what the power structure in place wants to be done. And they don't want anybody operating on any other decision-making process. They do not want someone doing things because their constituents want them to. They don't want somebody doing things because of an ideology about the Constitution or the government or Christianity. And to be honest with you, you know, if you were Jewish and you got elected and you were doing things based off of your belief system that countered anything to do with what the superstructure, power structure that is responsible for this mess in the country and the opening of the borders and all these deaths, the power groups, even if you were Jewish, they would come after you as well. They don't want anybody who operates on that level. And you see them talking about it, too. They're all about, if it's a Christian church that will go with the narrative and fly a rainbow flag and put immigrants in the pews or whatever, then you're okay. But if you're like an evangelical or somebody who's like more fundamental or belief-based, you're not okay. You can see the lines drawn through any population for them. They're only interested in who's going to do what, you know, who is willing to serve and deprive Americans of a choice on wars, economy, and immigration. Those are the three big things that are important to them. You know, power and control, wars, immigration, and economy. The same thing happens no matter who we elect. They don't really care that much about who marries who and what type of sex you're into and all this other stuff, except I do believe that some of the power groups appear to, in my opinion, to be pushing the LGBTQ and the genital mutilation of children, because all of these things equal the end of people's genetic lines that have survived for millions of years. It's a death cult. It brings lines. It brings houses to an end. All families and lines of people come to an end if they endorse.
It's all. That's the plan. It's all being taken down. You know that. It's obvious. I'm not saying you agree with it, but it's obvious. Here, you mentioned something. Power group. Power group. How about supremacist group?
Oh, Jewish supremacy groups like the ADL and the SBLC.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Definitely. Hey, Jeff, I've got an electrical storm forming over us and getting close here. I'm going to have to turn off my electronic. I got to shut down the computers here, and I'm on a landline.
All right. Carry on with the landline. That should be okay.
Yeah, if it gets a little rougher, though, I may have to bail. So if I'm gone, it's because people in the South, we're careful about being on the telephone during an electrical storm.
No, I've heard that. I have.
Yep.
Okay, carry on. We have right now, I don't know what you're seeing there, no evidence of a, quote, normal political campaign season, end quote. I'm not seeing anything out here. Are you seeing it there? Are you seeing bumper stickers? Are you seeing mailers come to your house? Are you seeing TV commercials?
Well, sticker thing, first of all, the entire bumper sticker thing isn't what it used to be.
It's passé. I understand that.
So since Trump versus Clinton 2016. That whole thing has quieted down any type of identifying thing because of road rage and threats
like
that.
I have one of Trump's placards autographed by Big Don himself.
Oh, yeah? Did you get it signed or somebody send that to you?
No, it was signed by him. I got it from somebody who was at this particular event, and it was definitely signed by him.
Right. Well, I think
it's hidden away. I don't have it on display.
I'm seeing a lot of the electioneering on social media being boosted, social media ads and things like that. I think that
it's migrating to digital. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of it's digital because the mail is so two things going on. One, the mail is so expensive, and two, the U.S. Postal Service ain't what it used to be. Okay.
That's the understatement of the hour. Easy.
Oh, look, we got people across North Carolina talking about how if you're going to pay a bill through the mail, and that includes having your bank send a letter, you better give it 2 weeks lead time.
And that's right. If you throw a stamp on an envelope, put it in the mailbox, 2 weeks, I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
To protect yourself.
You're going to see the mail towards the end and stuff because, I mean, the campaign training, you know, before I did Ali Beck, I had over 46 campaigns of professional experience. And what we do is we try to estimate our budget, set our budget goals, set our fundraising goals of how much we think we're going to have. But you never really know how much you're going to have. So what you do is you try to plan Election Day backwards. You say, on Election Day, I got to at least have 2,000 signs out and one mailer out and a robocall, let's say. And then you work backwards from Election Day, leading up to Election Day, to fill in your budget as you approach.
Question. All right. I'm going to rephrase it. How fast is the use of social media coming along in terms of replacing traditional political expression in this country?
Well, I mean, like, if one you had an idea, like, let's just take this Ali Pak meme criticizing Marco Rubio as VP and run it in a 2-mile radius around Mar-a-Lago to anybody over the age of 18 on social media, you can have that up and running in less than 30 minutes. Wink, 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 wink.
Yeah, and I don't know
what good it would do you to run your ad right directly over Mar-a-Lago for a couple of days.
Well, I was going to suggest that, but the bottom line is we all know that any election can be fixed. We know that. If we don't know it now, we shouldn't even be participating in any kind of political energy in this country. Stay the hell away from it. It's all rigged or riggable. Easy. No problem. Look what they did last time around. If you didn't learn then, you're not going to learn. So, I mean, you can make an argument. Why bother? They're going to put in whoever the hell they want. When I see an alleged poll on Fox claiming that Joe Biden, this is two weeks ago, is ahead of Donald Trump by 2 points, 50 to 48. What the hell planet did that come from? Who would ever in their right mind, out of hate, I guess, support Biden? They hate Trump. Got to support somebody. It's not good here. We're in bad
shape. Well, I think at this point, the best thing that we can do is to keep broadcasting to different people that we know.
Well, encouraging them to think. Absolutely.
Well,
not agree.
Well, encouraging
them
to understand that they've imported millions of illegals from around the planet to vote them in the upcoming election and take control of the country from them through mass election fraud invasion process.
Right.
So that if we're standing there on November 6th, and the superstructure of that's been doing this to the country is still in control, and people are like going, I don't understand how that happened. A lot of them are going to know. Now, what they're going to do, I don't know, because it's outside my realm of things, and I don't want you or anybody else speculating about it, because I learned a long time ago on the Janet Mefford show about how that goes down. So I don't speculate on it, but my message to the elites, which includes their agents who listen to everything that's said on this show, right, is don't do it. I know that you want to do it and just stick it in everybody's face and be like, ha, ha, ha. Even the Biden debate disaster can occur. The economy can inflate to hell and back. The borders can be wide open and illegals running around raping your wives and children. And we win anyway. Ha, ha, ha. Go ahead and do it. Because at some point, their revolution, their overtake, their power, that's where it gets to. Ha, ha, ha. We took the country. You lost. And now it's going to get really nasty. That's where it goes to, okay? But I'm trying to tell them, look, you don't want to say that to these. You don't want to say that to the United States in November of 2024. And if you do, you know, I'm trying to warn them, and it's not these Fed front groups or the last little remnants of the KKK out there running around, some type of radical racist groups. That's not who you have to worry about, okay? You have to worry about the 70 to 80 plus million people who are going to vote for Donald Trump, who are law-abiding, good people, gun rights supporting, free speech supporting, Constitution supporting Americans, who you're gonna tell them that they can't vote their way out of this, that peaceful political processes are no longer an option. Maybe that's what needs to happen. I mean, everybody just found out. We those of us that watch news like we did, we knew how pathetic Biden was. Everybody else just found out. I guess it's a good thing everybody else finally found out, right, Jeff?
I guess. What are they going to do with it?
Joe Biden vetoes the SAVE Act. Everybody else finds out that, realizes the Democrats count on non-citizen voters. I guess it might at least be a good thing that everybody else that hasn't known about this for so long finds out. It may take November 6th of, oh my God, the Democrats swept and won anyway, despite all of this stuff. I guess we just found out. I love the country. I don't want to see that happen to the people here. I don't want to see what happens to the people it's being done to, or back to the people who are doing it to them, because this country has been a peaceful, prosperous, stable place to be for so long. I think that clearly what the elites are doing with the open borders is deadly and dangerous to us. But if they want to push it to whole other levels outside of the election stuff, I'm cautioning them against it. I'm like, whatever you value, your money, your banks, all this stuff, whatever's important to you, unless you just want to, you know, kill a bunch of Americans for some reason, I really suggest that you don't do it. You know, is it worth ruling over something that, you know, what was it, King Solomon's, when there are two mothers fighting over a child.
Arguing over a baby, I don't know the story. Yeah.
And King Solomon said he was Solomon by chopping the infant in half.
I'm real sorry about that, chop chop. Mm-hmm.
Well, but then he figured out who the child's real mother was by the one that gave up the baby.
Yep, something like that. Look, all I know is what we're watching here in the so-called headlines bears scant resemblance to the totality of the construction of control that has been in place for a long time. This is not new. What's going on now should surprise people. What are we, 119 days away? 118 days away? What is it?
I didn't check it.
It's below 120. And there's really not much of any. Trump hasn't made his announcement. And I can almost guarantee you it's going to be some eight ball that nobody knows about.
Well, that would be better than Marco Rubio. Take that in a heartbeat.
I would hope so. But again, look at
Jeff,
Epstein.
One other thing, Jeff. Trump's loyalists, especially his most loyal supporters, are going to be very sensitive about the VP pick after the way the whole Mike Pence thing went down. Okay?
Right.
A lot of people knew that Mike Pence, and I'm not saying Mike Pence should have nullified the election or anything like that, but a lot of us knew that Mike Pence, who he was and who he served when they picked him, and we hoped it would be okay because he was also sort of like a mellow dude, and he was from Ohio, like J.D. Vance, and Ohio is one of those swing states where it makes strategic sense. It makes strategic sense for Trump to pick a VP from a swing state like Ohio, North Carolina, maybe even Virginia, if he could find somebody, Michigan, Pennsylvania, somebody that was respected, not protection like Kamala Harris. You know, what do they call it when you pick somebody that's so horrible that nobody want to remove you from office because they fear your VP pick?
You're voting with the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, but see, the problem with Trump is he's going to have a real problem picking anybody who's a true base conservative leader who might appeal to his people. He's very guarded and jealous about keeping control of things.
I just point to the past. Who did he appoint to the Supreme Court? What were his other key picks for his government? Some horrible establishment bureaucrat. Enemies of this country. Here are Trump's alleged shortlist members now. Now, this is not complete. Senator Tim Scott is black.
Yeah.
J.D. Vance, right?
Real quick, Tim Scott from a South Carolina solid red state, he gains no strategic advantage by picking Tim Scott other than possible attraction to black voters.
Good snap analysis. All right, Senator J.D. Vance.
Ohio, base conservative, keeps the base energized and riled up and helps bring in swing state Ohio.
All right, then there's Marco the Bubble Boy. We don't need to talk about him anymore.
Disaster.
Senator Tom Cotton.
I like Tom Cotton, and I wouldn't be too upset about him as a pick. And he's from, what's his state again, Jeff?
Arkansas. One of those. Let me find out here.
I don't think he's swing state. He's having a senior moment. My computer's off. Tom Cotton wouldn't be all that bad ideologically.
Right. Okay. Senator Tom Cotton. Now you got me curious. Hold on. Let me find it. Arkansas. All right.
Yep, I got it.
Okay, so we got Tom Cotton. He might be okay for a choice.
Yep.
You start right away. You look at the negatives. Then Governor Doug Burgum of North Carolina, North Dakota. Nothing. Forget it. He's got ties to globalists.
I don't know that guy. Isn't North Dakota like a solid red state already?
No, there's no reason.
And it's also a low population density state.
Yeah, there's 17 people there. Representative Elise Stefanik.
Oh, no. No, okay. No. complete rhino.
All right, here you go. Here's the other, the black guy from Florida. I think it's Florida. Byron Donalds. He's a rep, representative. Congressman Byron Donalds.
He doesn't need anybody from Florida, and he doesn't, you know, he needs somebody from Pennsylvania, North Carolina, right. New Mexico, Virginia, Michigan, I'm having trouble remembering my Georgia. Georgia would be a good pick. He said that'd be two Southerners.
Here's the eight ball that cuts across all lines of consideration. He's known. He didn't get anything on him while he was in office, so to speak. Dr. Ben Carson. It's a safe pick. It's not going to offend anybody. Ben Carson is like, what, white bread? Pardon the pun.
I'd rather him pick a conservative female.
There's nothing much there. But who, name me a conservative female.
Well, I mean, Kristi Noem, I guess.
No, she's out. She just killed her dog, shot him in the face.
I know, but listen, that's what people used to do in this country.
Now, that's Eustis. We don't live in Eustis now. We live in 2024. We don't kill dogs like that. That's the American people talking, not me. All right, the other one would be, here's the surprise, Tulsi Globalist Gabbard. There's your possible inside choice. Don't be surprised.
Laura Ingraham.
Well, she's got a good tie to the only good Supreme Court justice there now, I guess. Clarence.
Laura Ingraham is a solid conservative. She's beautiful. She's articulate. And she would help solidify the female vote. And you put Laura Ingraham up against Kamala Harris, and Laura wins any day.
Oh, the camel. Forget the camel. No, I ain't gonna.
Because I know Ann Coulter wouldn't agree to serve with him, but Laura Ingraham for vice president, that'd be a great pick.
Interesting call. All right, 119 days, 118 days. Let's track it. We'll be back next week with William on Wednesday. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Jeff.
Be safe.
Take care.
You bet. Okay, gang. Back right after this with another hour of covering the greatest tragedy ever perpetrated against the human species on the planet, that being the COVID bioweapon virus and the COVID bioweapon injection. In just a few, hang on.